Hi, hello, good morning. Welcome to the show. My name is Adela Wisdom, and I'm running for Congress for United States Representative in the 3rd Congressional District of Missouri. I live out here in Callaway County, and specifically Williamsburg, Missouri. I moved out here about 8 years ago with my husband, my now husband, and we purchased my grandfather's farm, so we're small farmers on about 8 acres out here. We have fruit trees and trees and chickens, and we make our living selling different items like that, and soap and Iloo. We sell those items at local farmers markets or on the sides of the road. And it's a beautiful life. I never thought I'd have that opportunity living in San Diego, California, where I am originally from, and being able to come out here and own some land and just enjoy your life and enjoy the things that you're doing is awesome. And I really fell in love with the community, and I continued my activism and my advocacy that I had been doing for the last 12 years when I got here. I fight for judicial reform, and I've traveled the world from Australia to Canada talking about a non-punitive approach to fixing our judicial reform, bringing a common sense approach to it, a science fact-based approach to complex situations and complex problems. Even had the opportunity to go to the United Nations and speak at UNGAS, attend that meeting and talk in groups of clusters of people getting together, talking about different ideas all across the world about issues like judicial reform, which is super complex. And I've noticed that with a lot of issues, it's not just cut and dry. When you get into it, you realize there's all these branches, how multifaceted it is, and how complex situations are. And you see this, unfortunately, in Congress, where they take a bill and they throw everything, including the kitchen sink, in it. And some of the things don't really relate to one another. And then they put a fancy title on it, and they give it to a Congress representative and hope that it goes through. So it's really interesting to see what's going on. But that's why I'm running for Congress, because I believe I can bring a common sense approach to complex issues. I am a constitutional Republican, but I do understand the need for compromise, the understanding that you're a civil servant and that you need to represent your entire constituency, all of them. And so you have to find a common ground. And that's what I believe I can bring to the table. Just because I'm a constitutional Republican doesn't mean that I don't have opinions that fall outside of my party line. And it's okay. All of those things are wonderful. We need new people that are willing and able to do these things to come to office, because it's really important that we bring change, because we're constantly changing. We're constantly evolving. And there's issues that need to be talked about. We need to base our decisions on policy, not personality. So what is a person going to bring to the table? That's what leads me to what I'm doing today. Being an advocate made me realize that I need to be in a place where I could bring forth the change that I want to see. So about 45 days ago, I started asking people questions about what they thought about different topics. And I started getting questions from them, which was wonderful. So every day I do a written response to a question. And then a week later, I follow up with a YouTube video. And then 3 weeks later, I do a radio show. This is really awesome, because it's given me the ability to have 3 weeks of just discussing one topic, but I do this every day. And so I learn, I get so much feedback, and I'm seeing what's really important to people. And I'm learning from the other side, and I'm figuring out, hey, if we just did this, or hey, this should be two different topics. So I really appreciate all the feedback, and I think it's wonderful. Which leads me to our question today. It's regarding adoption. It's question number 29. And it says, what are your thoughts about adoption in the USA? What a great question, because I just got done talking about foster children, about CPS, and these are all interrelated issues. And so it's really important that we talk about them all. I think, first off, adoption in the USA should be easier. Secondly, it should be cheaper, if not free. This is not a business. This is a child and future parents looking to create a family. So when we incentivize adoption by excessive cost or giving subsidies to foster parents, and and policies like that, we're really taking away from prospective parents. And I'll talk about why subsidies to foster parents could backfire. I understand that these, you know, if their intention is to adopt, we need to make sure that we expedite that process of adoption and not let it linger via foster parents. So a little bit about myself. My husband and I are actually in the middle of the adoption process. We had to remodel our home as it was a studio. It was a schaus. We're making it a schaffle. That's Missouri humor for everybody. It's a shop house. So we had to add 2 bedrooms, a new bathroom, update our kitchen, add a laundry room. We needed to do all this because we need to pass a home inspection, and that can cost us up to $5,000. So we decided to help limit our cost. I am a federally recognized Native American from the Cherokee tribe of Tahlequah, Oklahoma. So we decided to go through my reservation via the Cherokee Nation Adoption Program. It's easier, as I said, and the cost is something more affordable for us. I do understand, and we understand, that it costs money to raise a child. I mean, I'm not arguing that, oh, well, look, you can't even afford the adoption process. That's, unfortunately, we would need like $40,000 cash up front. And I don't know too many people that prepared their pregnancy with a $40,000 cash pot. So obviously we want to be parents, and I get that it is a little costly, and I'm not saying, hey, feel sorry for us. That's not it. We couldn't afford the IVF costs either. This is why we just decided to adopt. At the very end of the day, I want to be a mother and I want to have a family, and my husband wants to be a dad. So it matters more to us, more than money does. So this is important to us, right? So we've decided not to be foster parents yet, because we don't know how to be parents. We need to learn how to be a parent. And we just don't feel like we're ready yet to become foster parents. We're not prepared for either a 3-year-old or an infant to be handed to us, and we take care of this child for a year and then have to return it. I don't know how to cut those off yet. I'm not prepared for that. So I just need to learn how to be a mom first, and Aaron needs to learn how to be a dad. And together we will learn how to become a family. And then in the future, we definitely want to look into foster care and adopting through through the foster system. So adoption is a legal process which transfers parental responsibility from the child's birth parents to their adoptive parents. Adoption is a way of providing the security permanently and love of a new family when it's not possible for the child to be raised by his or her birth parents or within the birth family's proximity of you know, aunt or uncle or grandparents. At any given time, there are approximately 438,000 foster care children in the U.S. While some of them will eventually be returned to their families, some may be permanently placed in foster care, and those children then have an opportunity to be adopted by their foster parents. But in 2017, the average cost of adoption for a foster parent was $2,398, according to the adoptive families. Among the parents surveyed, 88% received a monthly subsidy from the government agency to provide care for that foster child. And that average subsidy was $827. That's wonderful. But if you place a child in foster care permanently, they're never adopted. Therefore, that family will always get that $827 until that child turns 18 or whatever that state law is. But if that person adopts that child, they no longer receive that subsidy. That's what I meant by incentivizing people not to adopt. We need to make sure that we put these people in permanent foster or permanent homes, permanent families. Families who adopt from foster care usually adopt from a county, state, or territory, or a tribal public child welfare agency. Adopting a child from foster care is often funded by the state, and in most cases, there are few to no fees, depending on what the subsidies are that they provide. Parents may choose to hire a private agency to help them through this process. These families would incur out-of-pocket expenses, which they typically can recoup from federal or state programs after the adoption is finalized. The largest cost associated with foster care adoption is typically the home study fee, which is a fee that covers having a court-appointed caseworker observe you and your fostered child care in your home to ensure that you're a suitable candidate for adoption. So kind of what we're going through is the home process. They need to come through our home and make sure that we have a room for the child, make sure that we have a functional kitchen, you know, a bathroom, and that we're able to take care the welfare of the child. That can cost, like I said, up to $5,000. So when in office, this is what I want to do to help mitigate some of these problems. I want to work with local adoption agencies and foster care centers to learn more about the problem. I want to discuss options and solutions with everyone involved. I want to reach out to foster children, to adopted children, to foster parents and adoptive parents to learn about their experiences in the process that they went through. Because I realize that these children are important, right? And they deserve a home. These children are more than dollar signs, and we need to have that approach. We need to realize that our children are going to grow up and be the leaders of this nation when we're older. And we need to make sure that we as a community are stepping forward for our children and doing the best that we can do for them. So according to the Child Information Gateway, working on private agencies to adopt a healthy newborn or baby or to adopt from another country can cost $5,000 to $40,000. The cost of working with an attorney and not involving an agency may range from $8,000 to $40,000, and it averages from about $10,000 to $15,000. Families who choose to work with the adoption attorney on these independent adoptions, they typically take an active role in identifying the child to hope that they can adopt and just make it a little bit easier. It's a sticky subject. We've even, you know, it costs, like I said, $40,000 to do some of the IVF or to have a surrogate. So it should be easier for children that are out there already to get into adoptive homes. I didn't mention this, but this is something that I wanted to say. I also want to work with places like Planned Parenthood, helping provide education and alternatives to women who may have an unwanted pregnancy, letting them know that there's options. They can help a family become a parents become a family by allowing their child to go up for adoption directly. You know, like say you walk into Planned Parenthood and there's meetings and you talk to the people and you tell them, hey, well, I would like to adopt. And we take away this negative stigma to it. And because, you know, 20% of the people, 20% of women in the entire world can't have babies. So back in the day, people would have children and they would give them to their family or their sister or their brother's wife or somebody because they didn't have a family. And, well, you know, it takes a village. At the very end of the day, all that matters is that we raise healthy babies, productive, involved children, productive and the means of doing what they're passionate at, finding what works for them and helping enable them to have a successful future. I noticed we have a caller. I'm going to go ahead and bring him or her on and maybe get some feedback and see if this person would like to partake in the conversation. Hi, good morning. Hello.
Good morning, Adela. This is Joe.
Hey, Joe, how are you doing today?
Not bad, not bad. I thought you came on at 10 o'clock. I guess I misunderstood.
It's 10 o'clock. I'm in Missouri.
Oh, okay. Because I always go by Eastern time. So... for how long is your show today?
I set it for an hour, and I just kind of go until it, yeah.
Okay. Adoption is a very powerful subject. It's a very important subject. I think people who are not ready to be parents, birth parents, should give up their child. And at the same time, those who are going to become the adoptive parents should realize, as you were talking about, the kind of situation they're getting themselves into. It's a lifetime commitment. You have to take... depending upon the age of the child, you have to make sure that child is fed, washed, taught at home values, able to adapt to school children in school, able to adapt to teachers, learn how to do homework. It is a huge responsibility, takes a lot of effort, and I think people never really truly realize what they're getting into, not just adoption, but just about any situation. It really takes an effort until they're very well enmeshed in that effort. And a lot of times, you know, it's too late. But this is an important subject because, as you were saying, we have to train the future people of America, and we have to do it with responsibility and compassion and love.
Yeah, and almost putting children that have been in foster care back into like a family, a productive family, that's an even harder process, because it's almost like an institutionalized attitude that a lot of foster parent or foster children get, because they're in and out of the system. And so you're right, there's a whole struggling process that happens when we put these children in foster cares and not in permanent homes.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're in it for the long run when you adopt a kid. You're in it for the long haul, and you're going to fight through whatever you need to. But as a foster parent, you're just kind of – I'm not saying all foster parents are like that, but you're getting $1,000 a month. The kid's mm-hmm. only going to be there for so long. You're not really – the kid can already be troubled. I mean, the kid's already been – you know what's really sad is this: the kid was a victim in the first place. That's why kids are in foster care, right? Because they're took mm-hmm. from a home that there was abuse or neglect or something was happening. And then now we put them into a system that is incentivizing people not to become parents permanently. And they're the victims of it. And so they're being victimized again and again and again. And I just don't understand why adoption should be free. If you really want to have change and you really want to get these kids into homes, why mm-hmm. is it so difficult to be parents?
Well, I disagree with you on your opinion that adoption should be free, because the other side of the pendulum will then arise. People will just find it so easy to adopt that
sure.
they'll probably do it as a lark, and then when they find out that it's not all that it's cracked up to be, then what do? I don't know much about adoption. I haven't looked into it. So these opinions of mine are coming off the top of my head. But I would rather have somebody put skin in the game if they're going to
True.
Adopt, because that means they're serious.
True.
You know. So I don't know how expensive it is, but I mean, you were talking $40,000, I believe, to adopt a child. That's a lot of money. I don't think the average middle class American can afford that.
No, and up front, you know, and that just makes it very difficult
wow,
to come up with so
too?
Much money.
Ugh.
Yeah, cash up front, and it's a very difficult process. Like I said, there's programs that you could get money back, but still having to go through the process is hard. Like I said, too, there's 430,000 children in the foster care system mm. as we speak. A child enters our foster care system every 2 minutes in the United
mm-hmm.
States.
Mm.
So that child
yeah.
has been ripped from their family, like
yeah.
ripped from their family. And I don't know, and we don't have mental health in schools. We're not helping these children through the process of becoming just being inundated into the foster care system, and we're not really having a lot of opportunities for the foster parents or the adoptive parents to go and learn and what to expect when you're taking in an adoptive kid or a foster child, especially if this child has already been abused
mm-hmm.
and ripped from their family. It just feels like there should be programs that help. I'm not saying that we need to create programs. I'm saying there's a lot of organizations that are nonprofit that
mm-hmm.
actually care and are created by people who were in this, who were put through the foster care system or who went through the adoptive process and realized that there's a need for this education, and it's out there. But we should be working, you know, in Congress and with the government, should be working diligently with these organizations to help provide education about getting children into permanent homes or getting the children back into their home. What is that family that may have gotten in this situation? How can they become better parents so that they can have their child back? Because I believe, you know, a kid at the very end of the day wants to be with their parents, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And if we could help that and get that to be – I'm not saying obviously there's going to be situations where that kid should not be put back in that situation.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for the most part, parents really want to be good. And it's not – like you said, it's not just cookie cutter. It's not easy. You never know.
Yeah, it's not easy being a parent because, number one, we can hear all about it. We can take lessons from our fathers, grandfathers, mothers, grandmothers, et cetera. But until we're actually there and until we actually have to take the diapers off, wash the child or buy the diapers or take the child to school or then clean up the vomit that a child has or take care of the child's temper tantrums, we don't really know. Kids love me. 98% of kids love me. That's because I can stay with them for a couple of hours and then give them back to their parents, you know. So I play with kids and my family and stuff like that, and they love me. Other people's children love me, but I don't have to be with them 24 hours a day. And that's a very, very tough task. So you're right also. People are not learning how to be parents. You can read books on psychology, but who's to say that the psychologists know what they're talking about? So it's an extremely hard decision to make. It's an extremely hard effort to put forth, and it takes a lot of patience. And I don't, and unless a person really has the patience of Job, I don't know how well prepared most people are.
No, I think you're right. I think you're right. And here's another a little weird, odd statistics. It's 36% of those 400,000 children that are in their foster care are under the ages of 5. So you're talking about the most vulnerable time of a child's life. The developmental stages are just going through the roof. And now you took them from their – they've been abused. They've been took from their family. And now they're in a foster care system. I have like 13 nieces and nephews. I have 6 brothers. I'm the only girl. And my husband has 6 sisters, and he's the only boy. Ironic, I know. And so I forgot what I was saying, but I see that these children, you know, they just develop really a lot from 0 to 5, and I'm afraid what we're putting that population through. And then are we then putting them on drugs instead of providing education, instead of providing mental health education? Or what are we doing to help them?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, Ritalin is a drug which shouldn't be administered to every kid simply because they're acting like a kid. And if you're going to go through those developmental phases, certainly by the time you're born to the age of 5, those are very important ages in which you're learning – are trying to learn about your body and your neural systems, trying to learn about your environment. And if you've been abused, who do you trust after that? If you're ripped from the parents and you have a DNA attachment to those parents, regardless of whether they've treated you well or not, and if you're ripped from them and have to go now live with strangers, and then if you have to go live with another stranger because the first stranger gave you up for some reason, maybe because the money ran out, how do you trust society? How do you not have a chip on your shoulder from the time you're 5? Well, let's say you're gone to another family at the age of 8. How do you not have a chip on your shoulder towards everybody that you meet from the age of 8?
Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Kids are shy. Kids are inherently shy. You know what I mean? It's not like a 4-year-old's going to just be like, hey, run up to your arms and hug you. So now they went through an abuse, and now they're in the foster care system, in and out. And they're, you know, they kind of wake up a little bit quicker. The reality is that they have to grow up quicker, and it's not always a good thing. Hey, Joe, I got a guy named Dennis on the line. I'm going to go ahead and bring him on, and we can have a 3-way conversation.
Sure.
So let's see if Dennis is around. Good morning, Dennis. Are you available?
I am. A little background noise maybe, but other than that, it's okay. Speaking of
how are you doing?
Car with a bunch of 3-years, I'm doing fine.
We can hear the children.
Yeah, we're just on our way to back to Tennessee, and the car's full, and the 2-year-old likes playing with the window button, and he wants the control, you know.
Well, you know, see, that's what we're talking about, children. Like, what are you going to do? That's just the way children are. I can hear them in the background. I'm going to put you back on mute. So, like, you know, like we were just talking about, it's all about the unexpected and not really knowing what you're getting into. But I think anybody who wants to be, who's interested in becoming an adoptive parent, definitely should look into it, because there's lots of programs that can help negate the cost of it. And I just think that it's really important that our children find homes, and that we just do more. I think we should be doing more in schools for kids that are transitioning. We just should be spending a little bit more time and energy on our children and getting them out of foster care and getting them into permanent homes. I just think it's really important for our youth.
Yep,
well,
I was waiting.
I'm not sure.
I guess maybe he has to take care of the kids in the car.
Yeah, I can hear him. I think he went back on mute because I think they were in Disneyland, so Disney World. So he was spending some time with a bunch of kids in Disney World. I think they were all, I think they're all under five or six, three kids under the age of six or something like that. So, and that's another thing that we see a lot of that we forget. Another token and another aspect of this is a lot of times when a child is took from a home, their siblings. So they're the siblings are all took, and then a lot of times they're separated. So that's your closest ally is usually your sibling. You know what I mean? It's your brother, your sister.
And if you're right, and if you're separated, then who else are you going to trust besides your DNA? And if you're going to be taken away from them and going to live with strangers again, it's weird. Plus, when you take a look at the number of kids born out of wedlock to mothers who don't even want these children, you know, but just, I think, what is it? It's on the average, it's something like 35% of kids born nowadays are born out of wedlock. So they're not being born to parents who have taken it, who've taken the responsibility of being a parent seriously. So that's another problem. We have to teach people responsibility. We have to really infuse that in the. For example, I don't have kids. I don't have kids because if I were to have kids, I'm going to pay for their private school. I told myself when I was, you know, in my teens, you know, I'm not going to get married or have kids unless I can afford the kids. And that doesn't mean buying them, you know, Pampers. It means making sure that they prepare themselves to become responsible adults and to prepare themselves for the obstacles and burdens of life, the corporate world. Making sure you get good marks in school, making sure you meet the right people, making sure that you make enough money so that you're content in life when you pass the age of 18. And I figured if I couldn't do it, then I wasn't going to wing it. So, you know, I think more people should be like me. I wouldn't mind living in an America where there's only 100 million people as opposed to 300 million people if 100 million people had a sense of responsibility and we had fewer juvenile delinquents, fewer kids going to court, more loving mothers and fathers. I think that would be a good trade-off.
It's funny that you say that. No, I agree with you 100%. And what you talked about was education. And I did a sex education, and we talked about pro-life, and we talked about pro-choice, and we talked about all of that very touchy, sensitive subject. And one of the things I talk about is the consequences of sex. And that's education. So people need to realize there's two consequences of sex. You either get pregnant or you don't. For a woman, like, there's true consequences. And if you're not prepared for those consequences, then you shouldn't have sex. You need to be prepared about every aspect of it, how it's going to influence your life, how it's going to change your life. And if you're not ready to take on that responsibility of the consequences, which could be a child, then you might want to ask yourself, am I doing this right? Am I doing this the right way by having unprotected sex or having sex out of wedlock? Should I abstain or should I get on birth control? Should I take a more realistic approach to preventing an unwanted pregnancy? So I definitely think that education is one of the key aspects. See, that's what I talked about in the beginning, how an issue is so, it's got its little tentacles in everything, you know, and realizing that I want to take a preventative measure. I don't want to even have these children in the foster care system or have the child be somehow hurt. I would like to take a preventative measure where we're educating people on how to be parents, and we're helping them, if they're not ready to be parents, not become parents. And then you mentioned something, and I wanted to say is out there, because we just found the police department found a one-year-old baby that had perished in here in Columbia, Missouri, behind a store. And I think education is crucial, because all you have to do is drop your baby off at a fire department or a hospital, and we should have a non-punitive approach to a woman or a father or a family unit that wants to put their kid out. Like, let's not promote killing here. Let's promote an alternative aspect. We get it. Sometimes you're just like, oh my God, I can't do this. And that's okay. It's okay. And we shouldn't have a negative stigma to somebody who's realized that they're at their wit's end and there could be a harmful consequence to it because they're taking action. And I think that's really important that we acknowledge that. And I love the fire department thing where you put the baby in the box and within 30, like 5 seconds, it alerts the fire department.
Yeah, right.
And it's, you know, it's anonymous. It's, you know, you have full
anonymity.
I don't
like that approach. I'm going to disagree with you because I remember back in the 20s, 30s, 40s, and 50s, there was a stigma, a shame if you got pregnant out of wedlock, if you had a child out of wedlock. Mm-hmm. That kind of value, even though it's a negative enforcement, should be around today. Today, people believe in free love, but expensive welfare checks. No, and I don't like the idea where a person can just go to a precinct or a fire department, just give up the child. It incentivizes irresponsibility because anybody can say, "Oh, okay, yeah, I made a mistake, but you know, I've got this remedy. I just drop the kid off." No, do not have the child.
Yeah, well, that's the preventative measure I was talking about. But I agree with you. It'd be nice if we never got to that point, and I could see how it could incentivize and give you an out, kind of like abortion is not birth control.
Yeah.
And a lot of people think, I just got pregnant. Let me have an abortion. It shouldn't work that way, and we should be educating people. Like, you know, I agree. Go back to education. Go back to sex education. I think sex education is not good enough in our school systems. I had so many questions still, and we need to make sure that we're covering them all. And even though it's a sensitive subject, we need to be, you know, I say the first baby I ever watched being born was from my sister-in-law.
Uh-huh.
I was in my 30s, and I was so confused. And I'm a woman. I was like, I don't get it. And the nurses were looking, they were nurse practitioners, and I'm looking at them. They're like, no, right here. And I'm like, and I was supposed to record it. And my sister-in-law goes, did you record it? I go, no. Oh my God. I was took back by, like, there was this baby coming out of you. And like, I was floored. I didn't know what to do. And she's like, I can't believe you didn't record it. I said, but I saw this baby come out. And if you really want to prevent unwanted pregnancies, I suggest that you have all teenagers, boys and girls, watch a real life childbirth.
Mm-hmm. And that'll make up your mind.
There's stitches and there's cutting and there's all sorts of crazy stuff going on. And there's a child coming out of you. And wow, that really is.
Well, that might help. To make people say, I'm not going to have any of that. I don't think we should have sex education in school because then it will be mandated by the government. And the government will depend upon who's in government and which way they're going to lean. So I would rather have the schools go back to the way they used to be. Reading, writing, and arithmetic, neutral subjects. Let the people learn about life from their parents. That's the parents' responsibility. Let the parents, according to their beliefs, their religion, their culture, inculcate the kid with those particular beliefs, as opposed to the schools coming along and saying, "Well, this is the way it is." Do you know now? And it'll probably be part of a government program sometime in the future. There are drag queens that are having these library parties, and parents are showing up with their little ones, 5, 6 years of age. And they're introducing their kids to drag queens. Now, in and of itself, if you're a tolerant person, you might say, there's nothing wrong with that. But when you take a look at the pictures of what went on at these particular library parties, the parents allowed their children to crawl all over these drag queens. The drag queens were on the ground, and they allowed the kids, you know, to touch them, crawl on them, and things like that to become familiar. Why? You shouldn't even do that to straight people. You know? I think that's a little bit too much of touchy-feely. Maybe it'll make the child sensitive to the plight of drag queens. That I'm all for. Let everybody be an individual. Have your own particular lifestyle. Just don't bother me with it. Do your thing. I'll do my thing. But I don't want the government involved because the government will again impose its particular philosophy. You know, and that depends upon if the Democrats or the Republicans are in office. And I don't think we should be subjected to that. I think we should make our own individual decisions on life and what we do with our children.
Yeah, well, and it goes back to education, whether it's from a school or from your parents or from your community or from your family. I agree, you know, whatever it is your family believes in and whatever traditions are within your family, yeah, absolutely pass those on. But, you know, education should still be there. Like, if you wanted to have that approach and you wanted to learn more about sex education as a parent, you should be able to go to your doctor. Get all that education so that we're not naive on what we're teaching people, you know. There is still misinformation out there. So, and I think women and men, like women, we should talk to each other. We should feel free to talk to other ladies and get advice and get information and get education without stigma. I think we should be more open and understanding to talking and educating people. That's how we always knew things, you know. Education was passed down through storytelling, and customs and traditions and beliefs were passed down that way.
Right.
But you're right. When you ask the government to take that over and become the sole person and sole entity giving that information to your child, it's going to exactly be whatever the agenda is of
absolutely.
That particular government at that time.
Sure.
I can absolutely see that.
Yeah. So I would want that. Just reading, writing, and arithmetic, and let the kids grow up, hopefully, with a healthy family. Now, nowadays, I don't think many families are very healthy. I don't think they're, you know, they just don't have the values that America once had back in the 40s, 50s, and maybe, well, the 60s was the beginning of the breakdown. But, you know, parents are giving up their children on a whim. They're adopting on a whim. They're having kids out of wedlock on a whim. No, there's got to be more responsibility and forethought and planning into one's future, into bringing in your flesh and blood. If there isn't any more important decision in life than deciding on whether or not you're going to bring in your DNA, I don't know what is.
No, I agree. I agree. It's a huge decision. I think that we everywhere tend to, dismiss and not take full responsibility for the fact that you are bringing in a person into this world that's going to grow up to be an individual, hopefully a productive member of society. But there has to be responsibility from the family first. And out of all the questions that I've been going through, I do see that a lot. And that's one of the responses I get from a lot of women. It's time that people take responsibility for their own family. And the more you ask the government to get involved, the more rights you're going to lose as a parent. So it's really important that you instill good values in your children at a very throughout their whole life, because you want them to succeed at whatever it is they choose to do. But it definitely starts within the family. And, the better you are with your children, just the better off as individuals they're going to be. And it does make a big difference. I didn't come from, my parents were divorced before I was born. I don't remember them ever being married.
Uh-huh.
And I come from a broken family, but my father married my stepmother, my mom, my second mom, when I was 3 years old. And they had two children, and she just passed away a couple of years ago. But they were a family unit, and I tell you, it's really hard as somebody who wasn't part of that. I was a half-sister. All of my brothers are half and step. I have three half-brothers. Me and my older brother have the same mom. Me and my two younger brothers have the same dad. And then I got three step-brothers. So it was really hard seeing the life that you wanted that they have that you'll never have.
Mm-hmm.
You get what I mean? Like, it's hard. And so you realize growing up that, wow, a family unit's super vital and super important. Especially when you see your dad having that wonderful life with his wife and having their two children, and that's their mom and that's their dad, and that's only my dad. But I called her mom, you know what I mean? But it wasn't really my mom, and you know that. And even though they try to love you to the best of their ability, there is still the fact that you are the stepkid.
Right.
It's silly. It's actually, like you said, it's part of the DNA. It's by no fault of their own.
Right.
Because, you know, if a car is coming to hit us, you instantly are going to go for your children. It's not a bad thing, but that's why it's DNA. It's part
It's a biological imperative. Children, I mean, parents love their own before they love somebody else's. And, yeah, the blended family is a good idea. Sometimes it works out very, very well. I would assume most of the time it just doesn't gel as well as it could, simply because the biological imperative is split between half-brothers, half-sisters, step-brothers, etc. But that's when responsibility comes in, because even if a father or a mother doesn't love to the same degree the kids that aren't biologically their own, they have a responsibility to treat those kids as human beings, to treat them with courtesy, with love, as much love as possible, with respect, with regard, and to teach those kids that, yes, Johnny came from a different mother, and James came from a different father, but you're all part of the same family. So we're all going to get along, whether you like it or not, or I'll bash your teeth in. How's that? Tough love.
Oh, Joe. No, you're a funny guy. No, it is. I was scared of my mom. She was no joke. She raised me in Hawaii, and my mom was a beautiful woman. She raised, like I said, she had two kids. It was she's still alive. I don't mean to sound like that, but she was a lineman in Hawaii. She was the very first woman to climb telephone poles, and she was definitely a force to reckon with. So,
right, yeah.
It's really important that you just have strong role models, and good. My mom just had a very good sense about her, and she made sure that we were always doing things that were productive. I was in Big Brothers Big Sisters. We always were gardening, she just did things to make sure that we were always active. I spoke 5 languages by the time I was in fifth grade, or by the time I was 5. She was always having me in classes, and she understood the ability to want to be able to work with people. Like, I grew up in Hawaii, so I learned Japanese, I learned Hawaiian, we did sign language. So I did all sorts of stuff, and my mom just thought it was really important for us to be exposed to it. We always went camping. Mm-hmm. But her father was a military man, and my father was a military man, and my sister-in-law is a military veteran. And so they were all in the Army, and my grandfather was, a veteran in D-Day and an amazing hero. And he was Cherokee. There was definitely life lessons and things that were how my mom wanted to raise us definitely came into play. And I feel like I would have lost a lot of sense of that had she left it up to the government to,
I'm not a fan of the government doing anything other than national security and perhaps overseeing the justice system. And that's it. Because you give the government too many powers, not enough restrictions, too much money, and you're going to attract a lot of people who want governmental positions, not to help out their constituents, but for power. And I think that's been the case for government for the last, ever since we've had the Constitution ratified, as a matter of fact. Because government will always attract those who are power hungry. I think we need better checks and balances also. I don't think the checks and balances that supposedly that we have are efficient enough. So the lesser of the government that's involved in my life, the better off I think I'm going to be.
No, and I agree. And that's what it goes back to, this adoption. It's a government entity, the CPS, that took the child from it based on a simple complaint, and that complaint can be from anybody. Mm-hmm. So if somebody's got it in for you, they simply can call. That child could be took away. There's no checks and balances. There's absolutely no oversight over CPS. They get billions of dollars, and they get money per child. And when they put them in foster care, they get money. When they adopt them, they get money. So I feel like they're really being incentivized. See, they do a take the child out of the home approach first, and that should be the last approach. We should see, is this warranted? Is this credited? But why are you opening the doors to CPS in the first place? Why we allowed the government to get involved in your children's life in the very first place? Why we've allowed the government to get involved in marriages, in divorces, in your property? why we've allowed them such overreach into our actual individual civil liberties.
We've been propagandized. The government, through the public school system and through other methodologies, have been telling us ever since we were kids that they're there to provide for us. So as a result, people believe it. You know, the government is supposed to take care of us, so they say they're taxing us. So let them take care of us. That's their mission, and that's the way a lot of people think. And I can't blame people for that. But the best government is the government that governs less. Let me take care of my life the way I see fit, and let there be a judicial system that's non-corrupt. And I can almost guarantee that if you have that, then you've got the major core of a nation that's going to be very responsible from coast to coast. Without an honest judicial system, without honest congressmen or honest politicians throughout the world, you're not going to have much of a country. The country will go downhill because the government will want to interfere with every single aspect of our lives. And I'm not for it.
No, and I think people are inherently good. You know, I'm an optimistic. I like to believe in the good of people. But I believe that if you've already put the preconceived notation that they're bad, they may act bad. When you have people, oh, you need to leave your backpack here. You know, I remember being a kid or in college, and I'm like, I'm not leaving my backpack here. No, I'm gonna. You guys are crazy. Why do I need to do that? Like, when you start treating people like criminals, they may start to behave like so. And so I think you're right. I think, you know, I believe in less government myself, and so I just think it's really important that we be given the chance to prove that we're good people. I think most people just kind of want to be left alone and do their own thing and happy families.
You know what most people want? Most people want to have a good job and enough money so that they can afford a house, afford a wife, or hopefully one of these days wives will be thinking, I can afford a husband, four children, okay, a nice neighborhood, nice schooling, work 8 hours a day, have weekends free, have a nice white picket fence, and that's it. That's all we want. That's for the most part. There are more people who are, I mean, there are some people who are more ambitious, you know, God bless them, but most people just want a very simple life without aggravation, no noisy neighbors, no neighbors from hell, you know, have a nice family, have family visits, have a barbecue on Saturdays, go to work and work for a good boss, work with colleagues that you like, come back home, have a loving wife, a loving husband, good kids. That's it. It's not much to ask for.
No, it's not. You just described a perfect life. No, I agree with you. I agree. No, I appreciate you calling in, Joe. We got about 10 minutes to the show.
Okay.
I'm going to go ahead and wrap it up. Thank you for calling in. I always appreciate your response. And like I said, I go on every day at 10, my time.
10 your time. I'll have to remember.
Missouri time.
Yeah. All right. Well, I'll talk to you
well,
soon.
You.
All right.
Thank you for calling in. I always appreciate it.
Take care.
Have a great day.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right, folks. Well, my name is Adela Wisdom. Like I said, I'm running for Congress for United States Representative of the 3rd Congressional District of Missouri. I'm running for office because I want to bring change to Congress. I want to be the change that I want to see. So if you live in District 40 or District 3, my apologies, which is Callaway County, Camden, Cole, Franklin, Jefferson, Lincoln, Montgomery, just to name a few, that's you. I'm in your district. So you want to learn more about my campaign, go to AdelaWisdom.com. Look on all the issues that we've covered. Click on the page. You'll see a YouTube video, my written response, and you'll see a link to every live radio show that I've done. In addition, you'll see my contact information, my cell phone, my email, and my private address. Contact me. I don't care how you do it. Write me, email me, or call me. I just want to hear from you. I want to know what's important and what issues matter to you. I'm also on social media from Twitter to Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. I hope you all have a great day. Thank you for tuning in. And join me tomorrow as we discuss another topic. All right, be safe, y'all, and have a wonderful day.